This is Money Every Month with Robin Roberts of Pikes Peak National Bank and Tim Lee of Hoff and Lee Commercial Brokerage.
Cash is king.
Robin and Tim will help you find, fund, and acquire assets to build personal wealth. Now, here's Robin and Tim.
This is Money Every Month, Episode 1. This is the show where we help you find and fund assets to build personal wealth. I'm Robin Roberts, here with Tim Lee. And in this show, our first show, we're going to answer your questions of who we are, why you should listen to us, and what we're going to talk about in future shows. So who are you, Tim Lee?
Well, I've been trying to discover that for a long time myself. I'm going to do some, you know, like Zen meditation, and maybe I'll come up with an answer. But I am Tim Lee. I'm also known as Memes to my grandchildren and my dog. So there is that. My dog reaches out telepathically to me and tells me everything she needs to know, so we connect on that level. But I am a commercial real estate broker in Colorado Springs. I started our company in 1987 with a gentleman named Bob Hoff, who has since passed away. And we retained the name of the company, Hoff and Lee, which is the company that I'm with. We now have offices across the country, agents spread out all over the place. And we basically list, lease, and sell commercial buildings for a living professionally. And we teach people best practices on how to acquire assets and grow their personal wealth. My personal background is a little bit more deep than that, in that I started at Fort Carson in the 1970s as a private. And I had no personal connection to anybody. I had no personal wealth, and I lived on a budget that gave me $5 a month, literally, to spend. I'd spend money, $5 a weekend. And so, you know, from a very early age and early on, I was very aware of money issues and not overspending and that kind of stuff. I was honorably discharged from the Army back in the day, which is also another really interesting eye-opening experience for me, because I got an award for my service while I was in the Army, and I got to write the commendation myself.
The Army is really good at doing
that. Yeah, you want an award, just write it up, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I did. It was pretty cool. So, but at any rate, I got out, got some formal education, spent some time in law school, and I actually dropped after my second year of law school. I mean, I narrowly missed an opportunity to, you know, spend my life as an attorney. I thought, oh my gosh, that was a close brush with death, right? And I got into professional selling, and I've been in professional sales since probably 1980. So it's been a long road. Along the way, I've been an elected official in Colorado Springs. I've been on the board of directors of a $1 billion utility company. I was instrumental in the transfer of a major hospital system from public ownership to semi-private operation, and a lot of other cool stuff like that. But my primary focus is teaching people how to get money every month, how to get more money every month. And I found that just talking to people and being around, it doesn't matter where I travel or where I'm at. I mentioned, in fact, this podcast and our radio show, money every month. And I mean, people's ears perk up. And so that's something that has really resonated with people. And so I'm really excited about this show and the opportunity to educate people. And I think that that's, you know, as we go through and grow this show and grow our podcast, I mean, I think that we've discussed that this is a platform of education, and we, you know, obviously our focus is on commercial real estate and banking, but I hope that we can talk about a lot of macroeconomic things, inflation, and how that impacts individuals and how it strips money every month away from them, and probably they don't even know it. And so, you know, been very blessed in my career, and, you know, been somewhat successful, people say, and you know, I'm happy to share that information and that knowledge, and I look forward to this platform being one of those ways that we can do that.
And you have another platform that has, what, 5,000 readers? Your market report.
Tim Lee's Market Report,
yes. Tell us about your market report.
The infamous Tim Lee's Market Report. Well, so that's a twice a month document that we produce that contains essays that are written by either me or one of my animals, either my dog or my cat, or, you know, maybe a horse, from their perspective. And then we provide information on commercial real estate that's available in markets that we service. And then also we provide commentary and, you know, topical information about political events and financial events and that kind of stuff. And it's a medium that we use to communicate with our audience, and we try to grow that audience as much as we can. Because I think the information that we give out in that platform is really valuable, and we get that kind of feedback. So that's a pretty exciting product that we give out.
Yeah, as a banker, I read it to see what kinds of properties that you have available, because I have clients who are always looking for property. But also, I open it up like, who's Tim going to piss off today? Because you're always at the end of your market report. You're always talking about something having to do with, you know, you hit pretty hard.
See, I don't think I hit hard at all. I think I'm like a pussycat.
I'm talking relatively speaking to, I mean, you look at things from a deeper perspective, yeah. And you're not just looking at things superficially, and you make people think.
Well, that's the point. I try to, in fact, the whole point of that medium, and hopefully this medium and the podcast, is to get people to think a little bit, and to draw them into conversation with us, build the community. And so what I try to do with that platform is to write a story maybe that people will think that's somewhat cutesy, to draw them in. I like to say it interrupts their reticular activator. You know, people get in the zone and they kind of do whatever they're doing. So we try and get them a picture or an article or something to interrupt their flow of thought so they can start thinking about real estate and the things that we want to talk about. And then I try to get into some kind of political commentary or financial commentary, because the system is so jacked up, and you don't get like a lot of truth in, you know, from really anywhere. And so, you know, I try and do a deep dive every, you know, week or every day on things that are of interest to me, that I think are of interest to everybody. I think one of the things that's really interesting right now is, for example, the topic of inflation. And I don't think people have any indication or any clue what it's about to happen to the economy in America. And, you know, you can't have $1 trillion sitting in the Bank of Congress waiting to be spent. 1.9 trillion new money that's in the process of being spent. And now a call for probably maybe another 2 or 3 trillion in infrastructure. You can't kind of push all that, you know, sausage into a skin without the sausage skin exploding eventually. And I, having lived through the inflation and stagflation of the 1970s, and I can tell you that, you know, as things are, there's a, as I like to say, the breeze in the morning has secrets to tell. But we don't get up to listen to those breezes. We sleep through it. And I think most people are sleeping through this, you know, very disruptive financial conditions that are occurring in the economy today. And so hopefully some of the stuff that we can talk about is, you know, those things, and give that kind of information so people can protect themselves and you know, realize that there are strategies that they can employ that, in spite of all the stuff that's going on in the economy that's probably politically motivated, there are things that they can do to protect their investments and grow their wealth.
And take advantage of opportunities given what the macroeconomic situation might be.
Right.
So as we do future shows, we definitely want to talk about, I mean, we want to talk about granular things that are educating for business owners who might want to purchase commercial real estate. How do they fund it? How do they find it? But also investors who want to diversify their portfolio. Maybe they're only in the stock market and they want to look at purchasing actual hard assets that produce cash flow. And then also more about the economy and things that are happening in current events.
Well, so here's one thing that I think is really interesting that we could talk about at some point, is that the idea that, you know, the old paradigm was that they'd come to you as a banker and say, hey, will you lend me some money? I want to go buy a piece of real estate. And you'd say, well, you know, maybe. And then you look at them and say, yeah, I guess I will. And so they would get the loan, and they would have a balance sheet, which, you know, is you add up the good stuff on one side, the bad stuff on the other side, and the difference is your net worth, positive or negative. Hopefully it's positive. And back in those days, the loan would be a liability and the property would be an asset. In the world that we live in today, which is so Orwellian, it's brutal, now you could actually make a very compelling argument that says that the loan is the asset and the property is the liability. So we can talk about stuff like that, but it's like stuff like that blows your mind away. But when you think about it, when you have such low interest rates fixed for so long, and if you bet against the inflation that's occurring currently in the system and is likely to occur more greatly in the system, then the difference is, you know, you're building wealth by having that loan. And so you could argue, my premise has always been buy stuff, pay it down, and pay it off. And I still believe in that. But you could argue that you should get the most amount of loan you can possibly get in the market today and bet against the government, which would be a good bet. It's actually basically like putting a buying a put on the dollar, right? Betting the dollar is going to go down. And, you know, it's actually a pretty safe bet.
So we've answered who you are. And
who are you? Who's that masked lady over there?
So I am the president and CEO of Pikes Peak National Bank, a community bank that's based here in Colorado Springs. And I've been in banking for 25 years. Now, prior to that, I too was in the Army. And
but
so,
you were respectable and did stuff.
Well, didn't you too?
I was a racquetball coach. I was like the racquetball pro at Fort Carson for 3 years. And so I coached the big shot officers on how to play racquetball.
Well, I don't want to diminish anybody's service, but...
You're welcome for my service.
Yes, thank you, thank you. So, yeah, so I was in the military for 2 enlistments. I was military intelligence, and this ages me, or dates me, I guess is the term, but I was in when it was the Cold War.
Oh.
So my first duty assignment was Munich, Germany, and the wall was still up, and we did a lot of surveillance and all kinds of top secret stuff that was really fun. One thing I love about the military is you're 18 or 19 years old and they just throw you in. Like they give you all the responsibility. You don't get that in the corporate world.
Right.
They're like, oh, you're 19 years old.
You don't know anything.
You start in the mailroom.
We have a 19-year-old kid that wants to come to go to work for us. His mom is a big shot in the residential real estate business. And you would know her. She does advertising all over the place and she's endorsed by Shark Tank and those kind of people.
Oh, yeah.
And she's quite a stud, and I love her. And her family has been commercial real estate clients of mine for a long time. And so her 19-year-old son wants to get into the commercial real estate business. And so he's come down and talked to me, and I thought, man, we need to put glasses on this guy so he looks older, right? Because he's a pretty smart kid. But he's one of the kids that's like the, he's the product of COVID because he was going to an elite college for big money, and not going to class, and he finally said the hell with it, and he dropped out and said, this is like a stupid waste of money.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, dude, what you need to learn, if you're just trying to get like an education to go earn money, college isn't going to give you basic college is not going to prepare you to go make money. In fact, they don't teach you about money in school or in college. And part of what I hope this radio show and the podcast is that we can help people learn about money. That's why we call it Money Every Month, right? But they don't teach you about money. And so he's in going to this prestigious school. You know, he could be doing basket weaving or Art 102 or whatever, you know, some monkey business kind of classes. So I said, what you ought to do is, if you're really serious, get serious. You know, get on with life. And, you know, you're 19. I said, you're a grown man, you know, and you shouldn't be living at home. I mean, get out on your own and, you know, get a job and all that kind of stuff. He dropped out of college. And I'm thinking, you know, all right, there's commitment. You know, and he's going to go get a real estate license, and, you know, he's going to go to work as a mentee in an internship kind of a situation and hopefully start out in commercial real estate.
Well, he'll probably learn a lot more about real life doing that than he would getting.
Yeah, I mean, the argument about college is you go spend 4 years there growing up, right? And you become like, what do they call them, snowflakes? You know, it's like, come on, man, you know, suck it up. I mean, you know, life is hard and then you die and, you know, get out in there and, you know, get beat up a little bit. But, man, I tell you, I run into snowflakes all the time. Make me crazy.
Well, I mean, we could do a whole show just on the change in dynamic of the importance of college when we were entering the workforce versus the importance of college right now. I think it's greatly diminished. COVID has really just disrupted that entire, it was already being disrupted, but it was very slow because that's a huge bureaucracy. It's in this institution, but COVID really.
Yeah, so I was watching Netflix last night. I was just kind of channel surfing on my iPad, and I came across a thing called, I think it's called Varsity Blues, the college entrance exam scandal.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen that.
Oh, my God. That is, everybody should watch that. That's, like, awesome because it just shows how corrupt the system was. And so you could go to Harvard University, the entry fee was, like, $30 or $40 million to go in the back door. So you could go in the front door because you were smart or you were qualified.
Yeah.
$30 or $40 million to get in the back door through the trust department, and then this guy figured out a side door. So it's like $300,000, and then he would go bribe a coach, and it would be, you know, like a random sport like rowing or sailing. Those are because like the ones that never got money.
Yeah.
And he'd give the coach $300,000 or whatever, and so then he would face shop or whatever you call that, you know, where you put somebody's face on another person's
Photoshop,
body.
Yeah.
Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
And he would send in these kids who had no athletic skill whatsoever, and say that they were going to be a walk-on athlete, and that particular sports program. And so they would get put in another pile that they were accepted at the university, guaranteed in. And he called that the side door.
Yeah, but it was a side door right into prison.
Well, for them, yeah, but they got caught.
Jail.
Right, but,
yeah.
the point is the system's so corrupt.
Oh, yeah.
So
but
corrupt.
Anytime there's all that government money in something, you're going to see corruption. Because look at all the student loan debt. That's backed by the government.
But they're going to forgive the student loan debt.
Well, that's, another show.
That's another one, yeah.
But one of the things I think is important for our listeners to understand is that you and I both were doing what we're doing now during the recession. And so we really saw fortunes made and fortunes lost, and how banks handled real estate loans, the loss in value of real estate during that time. And we saw people who were really doing well not do well.
Right.
And then over the last decade or so, they've had to rebuild themselves. And we've seen people do that successfully.
I was one of those guys. Yeah.
I have many clients who have done it really successfully. Some have not. But when you go through something like that, when you go through the recession in banking, in commercial real estate, it changes your view on putting some boundaries, putting some curbs in place as you make decisions about investment real estate. And
well, it totally does. I mean, the COVID thing, I heard somebody talk about this the other day. It was like, if you were a depression era person and you lived through the depression, I mean, your life, your worldview was altered irretrievably by
right.
that experience. And so then it made you less inclined to make investments, and you might be more inclined to hide money under the mattress of your house.
Right.
You know, so Granny probably had money underneath the mattress, and because she went through that tough time. And
yeah.
so it's going to be really interesting to see what people do with respect to COVID. And it's kind of interesting because the real economy is so disconnected from the financial economy. I'm not sure that people that had the financial wherewithal, that bridge in the wealth gap, the people that have money, I think it's like been business as usual for them. So I don't know if there's an impact, but it's the other people that were impacted. You wonder what the psychology is going to be, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. I mean, it's kind of like, oh my God, I don't dare do something because, you know, the other foot could fall.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's really how it was coming out of the recession.
Right.
People were fearful of purchasing homes. They were well, first of all, they couldn't even get financed for homes. They were fearful of purchasing commercial real estate. Banks still had a lot of that on their books. And so it really took 5, 6, 7 years to work through that and get to the point where commercial real estate had regained its value and people were buying it to generate cash flow.
I talked to this friend of mine in Phoenix or Scottsdale today. And in 08, when the market, well, in 06, before the market crashed, one of my partners and I did a commercial condominium development and we sold offices. And it was the year that we did that, I want to say it was 06 maybe, it was hailed as the best commercial development of the year that year. And it was a really neat little project. And I think we made pretty good money, but I never got to see any of it because as a developer, you take the money from the first one and put it into the second one.
Yeah.
But we got into the next one and it was, you know, we paid a lot of money for the land and we, you know, had the first building almost all the way up and finished. And then 08 came along I remember the banker at the time called me up and said, hey, you need to bring down $20,000 for your payment this month. And I had a stroke because I hadn't been making any payments because back in those days, the lending was credit lines. And so they would lend you all the money you needed and they would pay themselves back by adding to the credit line.
They an interest reserve
exactly.
where they just
yeah.
held the interest and then paid through.
Well, it was even worse than that. They weren't even doing that. It was just like drawing down the line to pay themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, so, and they said, oh, and by the way, tell your partner he needs to bring $20,000 too. So it's $40,000 a month. I said, oh, you got to be kidding me, you know, right? So we made one payment and that was the end of that. But my point is that because I kind of got burned bad with that and was able to work myself out, I missed an opportunity because of my hands were singed, right? And so this guy I talked to today in Phoenix, he didn't have that. He had nothing. And so when the markets crashed, he went down to Phoenix and he was buying all these houses in Phoenix, Scottsdale for like pennies on the dollar. And I called him up today because to talk about something else, and I said, so are you still working? And he goes, no. He goes, I retired about 4 years ago. I go, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, remember all those houses I bought? He goes, I own 11 of them free and clear now. And I'm thinking, these are probably like $1 to $2 million each houses. And this guy, you know, he wasn't that smart of a guy. But he wasn't burned by that one downturn. So he was able to go jump into that market. And at that time, I just didn't have the stones to go do it.
So many people didn't. And I mean, those houses, I mean, that was a terrible real estate market. Phoenix, Scottsdale, Las Vegas. I mean, it took years for Las Vegas's residential real estate market to recover. Florida also was really bad. So people who had the cash and had were able to take that opportunity were able to buy things low, and they're holding on to them now in a very strong housing market with no inventory.
Right. So the question you have to almost ask yourself, are we in a bubble? And is it going to crash? And should you be sitting on cash waiting to go buy the next deal? And it's like, I'm not sure.
Well, I think that takes us to a quote Buffett. That we wanted to talk about from Warren Buffett. And this is from an interview he did on Investing Today. And we're going to play the clip right now so you can hear it for yourself.
There's two kinds of items that people buy and think they're investing. One really is investing and the other isn't. If you buy something, a farm, an apartment house, or an interest in a business, and look to the asset itself to determine whether you've done something, what the farm produces, what the business earns, and so on, you don't really care what the stock market's open. You can do that on a private basis. In fact, you do it on a private basis if you buy a farm or apartment house generally. And it's a perfectly satisfactory investment. You look at the investment itself to deliver the return to you. Now, if you buy something, Bitcoin or some cryptocurrency, you don't have anything to produce anything. You're just hoping the next guy pays more.
You know, when we talk about investing, we talk about money every month, and at the end of the day, when you just go out and talk to anybody on the street, you say, what's your biggest financial concern? You know, right? Well, I run out of money before I run out of month. You know, it doesn't quite stretch.
Yeah.
And, you know, so what I hope to do as part of this show and everything else is help people figure out how to stretch, you know, not even stretch, but to add more too, so they don't have to stretch. So you don't have to, like, diminish your lifestyle to stretch the money to make it to the end of the month, but to encourage people and show people how to get more money every month so they have more money at the end of the month. And what Buffett's really talking about is kind of near and dear to my heart. So we buy assets that we like, that we'd hold long term, and we pay some attention to price, but not particularly, you know, that's not the number one thing that we do when we look at an asset. We say, hey, we'd like to own that building. We look at everything, what I call multi-generationally. So is it something I'd be happy to have my child or my grandchild have, and would they be proud of that? And so the way we evaluate stuff is a little bit different. Now, obviously, you just can't go pay, you know, 10 times too much for it and make a dumb business decision. But we try and do is find stuff, buy it, pay it down, and pay it off and get debt-free. And that really develops what I call a money wheel. And the money wheel comes around once a month and dumps money into your bucket, and pretty soon you get enough money in the bucket. You can go out and buy another asset, pay it down, pay it off, and more money goes in the money wheel. So there's definitely a process. And, you know, it's all about the asset producing the income, which is what Buffett's saying, and acquiring good assets. Robert Kiyosaki said it best, and I love it. He always goes, rich people don't work for money. They work to acquire assets. And I've shared that line with a lot of people, and they go, oh, my God, that's, like, brilliant. And I go, well, when you think about it, it gives you a different spin on how you want to live your life, right? So you don't want to get a job and work for, you know, like X number of dollars an hour and think you're ever going to get anywhere. I mean, you can, I suppose, but that makes it harder. And what you want to do is get educated and learn how to acquire assets. And so hopefully that's one of the things we're able to do with this program.
And I think that answers the last question, which is, what are we going to talk about on this program moving forward? And certainly we want to talk about larger economic issues and thoughts and theories that affect people buying assets and what type of assets they should look at. Certainly we're focusing on real estate, but there could be other things as well. But also we want to educate business owners about buying their own real estate, and you know, they might be leasing and now it's time to take control of the cost of their overhead. And also when they own their own real estate, they build net worth for their business.
So I sold a building. I helped a guy sell his building earlier this year or late last year. I forget when it was. And it was a nice sized transaction, but this guy was just a, you know, Joe Lunch Bucket, had a business, went to it. I mean, it was a service business in the construction trades. And he went to work every day for, you know, 15 years. got his little salary that he paid himself and all that stuff and paid all the bills and all that stuff. But at the beginning, he bought a building. And so they decided that because of manufacturing China, because they were having all their product manufactured in China, that that wasn't working out anymore. So they got rid of all that, and they were going to downsize and become a sales operation. So they needed to sell the building. They didn't need the building anymore for their business. And we got the building sold, and it was like a, I would say, $2.7 million sale or something like that. And we're at the closing, and I asked him, I said, so, you know, kind of a personal question. You don't have to answer if you don't want to, but did you just make more money selling that building than you made working for a living? He goes, I wouldn't tell anybody this, and so I'm not telling anybody this, right? He goes, I made more money today selling my building than I made if you took every year and added it all together in income. And that's the value and the promise of buying assets and acquiring assets.
I've seen over and over businesses that start, then they grow, and they start by leasing their space, and as they grow, they buy the commercial real estate for their business. Ultimately, they sell the business. The owner keeps the real estate, and they've both sold their business as an asset, but they've kept their real estate, and they retire with money every month.
Yeah, and what they do is they sell the business, own the real estate, and the buyer of the business stays and pays them the mortgage. So they
carry that out. And so I think a lot of small businesses, especially newer businesses, or they've signed a 3-year or 5-year lease and they've started to grow, maybe they're outgrowing that space, they don't know where to start.
Right.
I get these questions all the time. I know you do too. How do I fund it? How do I know what I qualify for? How do I find the right property? And, you know, I need somebody to guide me through that process. And that's what we're going to do through this show, is talk about kind of larger theories and discussions, but also get really granular in some of our shows about how to lease. If you're a tenant, what are the things I should look for in my lease to protect me? If I'm a landlord, what should I make sure I have in my lease?
Right.
How do I even find a commercial real estate broker to represent me? How do I find, how do I get funding? How do I even apply? Who do I talk to? All of these things we're going to talk about in the show. And we hope that we'll hear also from our listeners, hey, you guys should cover this, or give us some ideas. We're certainly interested in hearing any of it.
I think you should give out your email address so people can email you and ask you questions, and we bring them out.
You can always email me at Robin, R-O-B-I-N, at PPNB for PikesPeakNationalBank.com.
And if they want to connect with me, they can do this. So simple. Just go to Tim, T-I-M, at Hoffleigh, H-O-F-F-L-E-I-G-H.com. And love to hear from everybody, actually.
Yeah, we'd love to get if you have questions about commercial real estate, about funding of commercial real estate, we can make a whole show around that. Or if there are, people in this field that aren't Tim and I, but you would like to hear from them, we'll get them on to be guests.
Yeah, I think that'd be awesome. So I want to mention, speaking of guests and people on the show, a couple of people that are helping pay for all this. One of them is Werner Restoration, who's a roofing contractor, a friend of mine. And what I like about him is that they've got this, drones? They do drone flyovers of buildings and the roofs, and they have like infrared cameras that can tell you if you have roof problems. So really cool technology. And then Unified Title, which is a title company that does all of our title work. So we'll bring probably both those guys on for a 5-minute clip sometime and let them give themselves a self-promo. But we have a lot of good people that are interested in helping us get this show launched, and we're just tickled to death to be here today. And hopefully we'll build a loyal following, and so we'll, you know, see people in restaurants and say, hey, I heard you on the radio, and they'll buy us dinner, you know, so there is that, you know, looking for the ultimate thing.
Well, we appreciate you listening. Next week's show, episode 2, is going to be for the business owner who is looking to buy commercial real estate for their business. So that show, we're going to give you 3 takeaways of how to purchase real estate for your business.
That sounds like an awesome plan. So who are we going to get to help teach that?
You.
Oh, that's us.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. Okay.
Thanks for listening to Money Every Month.
This has been Money Every Month with Robin Roberts and Tim Lee.
Cash is king.
Join us weekly for more invaluable insight into the world of commercial real estate. And be sure to listen to the Companion podcast on Podbean,